My condolences to anyone who's ever lost me, and to anyone who got lost in me, or to anyone who ever felt they took a loss with me. My apologies
for the misunderstanding. Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CeCe, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hey, hey, hey.
What it do? What it
do? Happy Friday.
Happy long weekend for those of us in the UK. Bank holiday weekend, because we didn't actually celebrate Labor Day on the 1st, so we have Monday off.
I'll do everything strange.
It is. It's like, what? Like, Sunday is not Mother's Day here, because they already have that in March. Extra. That's how they do in the UK. So, let's kick things off with apology politics.
Apology politics,
especially when it comes to folks who have either done something to upset queer folks or consider themselves queer. Let's start with Kalani. Now, everyone's been feeling Kalani recently. You know, she put out a pretty decent album. She's being funded by Backstage Capital for her startup. Backstage Capital specifically funds underrepresented founders such as LGBTQ folks, women, Black folks, all that kind of good stuff. You know, she ticks a lot of boxes. And recently she tweeted, I think it was last week, that she is attracted to women, men, really attracted to queer men, non-binary people, intersex people, and trans people. Apparently that was problematic for some people. So she wound up deleting the tweet and explained that she deleted that tweet because she has a massive responsibility by having a platform. So now she partnered with Fashion Nova. I don't know how Fashion Nova is so big, but anyway, that's another subject. Partnered with Fashion Nova to give $50,000 to LGBT centers across America. And she did that in, from what I saw on her Twitter feed, $5,000 slots. So, like, you know, she was handing out $5,000 checks. That's an amazing apology. She not only deleted the tweet, she also was handing out money. But my question is, what does she have to apologize for exactly?
Well, people that were critiquing the tweet were saying essentially that gender's not binary and there are genders that she's not including and
She said non-binary people. She said intersex.
Yeah, she
people.
Said all
she
of
said
that.
Trans but, people. Know, I'm just wondering
I think
who
that
else was
the
missing.
Language around gender is so in flux right now. And it is in flux. Like, there has not been, even in the queer community, a consensus on the language around gender for a minute. And also, there's a demand, I think rightfully so, from people who want to make sure that language around gender is inclusive. I think, so
okay.
She's not
okay,
backing
but
down
but let's be really,
stating
but,
she has these patterns of attraction.
I get all of that, but let's be really specific. She said, women... men, queer men, non-binary people, intersex people, and trans people.
And all of those are correct terminology.
And she was saying who she's attracted to, right?
Right. And I think that this is kind of the conundrum of women specifically. It is a feminized sort of critique that is that gay men have not faced. Let's just be real. Gay men are not facing a critique like, oh, so you're gay? So that means that you're not inclusive, that you're just transphobic? You know, I mean, it's something about, you know, the critique that is directly focused on women when they start talking about their patterns of attraction, that they need it to be as expansive as possible. And to the extent that even stating that you're bisexual is seen as transphobic, which I think was in part some of Janelle Monáe's pushback, why she came out and said I'm bisexual and then came back and was like, oh, actually I'm pansexual, right? I think that that was part of her evolution as well. Was
perhaps,
this idea
but I'm just saying Kalani had everybody listed. I'm confused as to who is missing from this list, especially if
and
she's talking about who
was.
She's attracted to. Like, that's who she's attracted to. Unfortunately, because she deleted it, it's impossible to find, like,
what
you know,
the critique was
the exact critique. But I mean, okay, fine. So she's apologized. It seems like everybody's.
I'm glad that she's not backing down on coming out and stating her queerness and talking about her patterns of attraction. She's just saying that she could have said it in a way that would address that critique, whatever it was.
I'd love to know what that way is. I really would.
Uh-huh.
In other apology news, we have Joyanne Reed from MSNBC, who many of us like because
she's Guyanese.
She is Guyanese, very proudly Guyanese. Mm-hmm. And she has, in a way that a lot of people have not been able to, she has pushed back hard on the current administration in Washington, D.C. There is not a day where she, you know, there's not a great clip for how she's pushing back to ignorance on her show. She won't even give it room. Mm-hmm. And then someone went digging and found on a blog that is now defunct. It's, you know, she hasn't used it in over, I don't know how many years, found something where she supposedly, in her words, was, you know, telling someone like Keith Olbermann to make sure that he distinguishes himself, that he's, you know, that he doesn't allow people to assume that he's gay, and so on and so forth. So there were some homophobic comments on this blog. Joy, after being made aware of it, you know, had a security, cybersecurity team come in, look at some things. It's being investigated now, apparently, by the FBI as well, because she says there was a security breach that the cyber team found, and she personally does not remember making the comments. She gave an apology on her show, about 4.5 minutes long, explaining all of this and apologizing for words that she personally cannot remember writing, and at the same time saying she knows that her own politics and understanding of the queer community has evolved, and that she, you know, remains one of our big allies, and so on and so forth. Some people felt like it wasn't a great apology because she didn't own that she wrote it. I think it's hard to own that you wrote something that was maybe 10, 15 years ago if you honestly don't remember it. But she took she held herself accountable for it being on her blog, whether she wrote it or not. So,
and not only that, but she said, given my statements, my ignorant statements about queerness at the time, I can understand how people would feel like maybe I wrote it. Like, right. It's not outside of the realm of possibility.
She did say that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So do we accept that?
I do. I mean, at the end of the day, I just feel like we're in this upside down Alice in Wonderland world where people on the left are held to these ridiculously high standards and people on the right have no standards. And are continuing to push that boundary, right? And I think it was a very eloquent response because it does not, if she can't remember, she can't remember it, but she's not saying, I absolutely unequivocally did not write it, which I think a lot of people, if they can't remember it, would say. And I think that also, and then she apologizes because even creating an impression of yourself where it seems like you would be that homophobic is already a problem, and owned her past homophobia and her evolution from it. If we don't allow space for that, then what exactly do we want? Like, do we want people to come out of West Indian households?
Right, exactly. Let's be real. Let's be real.
One of those households.
Let's be real.
There's no way I'm coming out of that home, you know, in, you know, 90 whatever, without the internet now.
So, nobody comes, you know, out of the womb woke.
But, you know, we didn't even have the exposure that people today have, mm-hmm. in terms of, like, the internet. We didn't have the Tumblrs or the Instagrams. And the whole climate was radically different.
Sure.
You know? I mean, the first time a friend came out to me, I said some radically homophobic stuff that I didn't even really give any thought to because I was on automatic repeating what my parents had said.
Right.
And my pastor had said. And that's just how that rolls, you know? And then when you come to terms with that as yourself coming out as a queer person, that you in the past have been homophobic, and therefore you have turned that old toxic gaze on yourself, it's a whole bag of worms that you have to unpack. If you don't, like, let people have that process and that evolution, then what are we really doing here?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% on board with her apology. I thought it was a good apology. I appreciate that she took so much time on her own show to do it. So she didn't do some, you know, Twitter apology or some written apology. She was like, let me do this on my show. So I appreciated it. I understand why people might be disappointed, but hey, queer people themselves are homophobic, right? There's internalized homophobia. There's internalized transphobia. There's all kinds of things. So
there's a Pulse victim that came out and said Jesus cured him of his homosexuality. And that's how he's dealing with his trauma. I mean, like, we all go through stuff.
Right.
You know, this idea that you're going to cancel someone without really looking at, are they growing? Are they changing? Are they evolving? Is, I think, a bit of a problem.
Absolutely. The big news perhaps making waves this week was Women of Color of Time's Up putting out an open letter in support of Mute R. Kelly, which is a hashtag protest that has been going on for a while. It didn't just start with Women of Color Time's Up, but they definitely joined and gave it some great weight this week with people like Ava DuVernay, Shonda Rhimes, Kerry Washington, and so many more. You know, tweeting and retweeting why they're joining in this protest. My issue, or what I would like to discuss, is in this letter, they mention Bill Cosby's recent court decision. They also go on to list R. Kelly's, you know, some of his stats of what the past 25 years of his career has brought him, as well as some of the things that are more concrete, you know, the things that we know are facts. For example, that he married a girl who was under 18 years of age, that he was indicted on 21.
Under 16 years of age.
Well, I'm reading from the letter. Mm-hmm. She 16, it doesn't matter. 18 is, you know, across all states at 18, you are an adult. That he was indicted on 21 counts of child pornography and so on and so forth. He was not convicted, however. It was an indictment. They go on to list companies that work with him, such as RCA Records, Ticketmaster, Spotify, and Apple Music, and the Greensboro Coliseum Complex. They want his future concerts canceled, like on May 11th. One show was already canceled on May 5th, which he apologized to his fans for. He's very frustrated because he said he doesn't know of concerts and shows getting canceled on account of rumors. Now, my thing is, when calling out places like Spotify and Apple Music for streaming his music, I feel like that becomes a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of artists with a lot of other convictions, right? Like actually convicted for crimes, who get streamed on those sites. There are artists who have been forgiven, maybe because of their deaths, for very well-known domestic violence accusations, such as, you know, I hate to put his name out there because I know that he's a legend, but let's, you know, James Brown.
James Brown!
James Brown beat his women. It's a well-known fact. He grew up watching his father beat his mother. Then he grew up in a brothel, and so on and so forth, right? So he had a history of this, and he carried that forth. But his music can be streamed, and no one is calling for that to stop.
Yeah, he's not profiting from that.
I don't. Sure. It's a slippery slope if we start that way, because someone is profiting from it. And so if it's only about R. Kelly himself profiting from it, that's a problematic statement altogether.
But it's not,
I'm not sure about this letter.
R. Kelly is not specific about this letter. Okay. R. Kelly is specific in his visibility and brazenness in his crimes and him using his stature and his continued access to recruit more women and to continue perpetrating these crimes across the board. I think someone who's like old in nursing home, I mean, I think of course, you know, by all means,
Bill Cosby is old and needs a nursing home.
Yeah, go after Bill Cosby by all means. But he's alive. He's here. I think going after people posthumously, like Michael Jackson, James Brown, or whatever, it's kind of a different story.
I think it's a slippery slope to demand Spotify and Apple Music not to stream his music when there are so many other people who are still alive. We have the new allegations against Nas for his domestic violence. And there are just so many that I could list right now.
Extension.
There's so many. Or, you know, a Cassie Affleck, who is, you know, he's making money from whatever, whatever, and he has his sexual assault. I'm sure Harvey Weinstein is still making money and so on and so forth. I think it's a slippery slope to start demanding things like this for one person if you can't, if it's not something that can be implemented across the board.
Yeah, and it's, I think it would be hard, if not impossible, to implement it across the board, especially if we're going on indictments and not convictions. So you're not looking at an actual legal criminal record. The thing, though, is that I think that given R. Kelly's just, oh my gosh, he's a mess, and he's been a mess. I think that this is the only consequence that can be enacted upon him, because he's too money to get legal consequences, and he's too good at grooming to be able to have any of these charges even happen or stick. It's just how it is.
Yeah, well, so, I'm just not convinced that. I mean, I appreciate Women of Color Time's Up. I don't know why it's Women of Color. I don't know who they're talking about. Are they talking about Black women right now? Are they talking about women of color? Is it a mixed group? Let's be really specific. Don't know who it is, but you know, I wholeheartedly agree with calling R. Kelly out and joining the protest, but I don't know that the points that they've listed are, if you will, fair, to the extent that if you're going to demand it for this person, then it has to be demanded for other people.
Yeah, I mean, like, Elvis married a 14-year-old. That's public record. I mean, like, all kinds of stuff has happened with people that are now streaming. But I think it's a bit different when you can enact consequences on people that are alive and still making money and still out here doing their crimes. And there's no legal way that you can hold them accountable. Because let's be, the law isn't perfect.
Right, but this is when we talk about things like net neutrality, right? So YouTube decides that it's going to remove hate videos, videos that incite violence, videos that are very far right. And then people say, okay, so how do you make that decision? You know, how do you make that decision that that's what you're going to do, but you're not going to do it for other people? Reddit decides to take down its hard right stuff, its hard right subreddits. Then you have Facebook that has these policies that they try to enact, and it winds up being Black Lives Matter, people who are taken down more often than people on the right. All I'm saying is, from like a net neutrality standpoint, if you demand from a streaming site like Apple and Spotify to make decisions about who can be streamed and who can't be because of allegations, indictments, yes, no convictions, it becomes a slippery slope.
But there's all manner of artists that they don't stream, right? So it's not like Apple and Spotify are like YouTube in the sense that if I decide to, and I might be wrong here. My understanding of the Apple streaming service is that not every single artist can just say, hey, stream my music. And then that
But it's app. Not based on politics, and it's not based on past convictions.
What's it based on?
They have a whole scheme of things. Like, you have to be a real artist, but it's not hard. I have music on Apple. It's not hard to get your music on Apple.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that it would be, it's almost like a public accommodation. So anyone could do it, and therefore they shouldn't be discriminatory about who gets it.
I'm saying it's a slippery slope if you demand streaming sites to take music down from one particular artist due to allegations against them. And then where does it stop?
I'd like it to start with R. Kelly. I'm interested in seeing where it goes. But I that strategy of the letter of saying to Apple, I didn't think they would go there. I mean, he's making money, but that's not even real. Where the real revenue is coming from anyway. Not for R. Kelly or any artist, to be quite honest. Even if they're the most streamed artists, it's just not, you don't make money from streaming.
You make good money. You can't make money from streaming. Like, Ed Sheeran made about $4 million last year from the amount of streams that he had on.
But that's Ed Sheeran.
I'm just saying. Ed Sheeran made about $4 million from streaming, just from streaming on Spotify last year. So.
So, I mean, like, that's just, you know, that magic money. But, you know, I remember when Happy was like the highest streamed song. And when I saw how much she got paid for getting streamed millions of times, I was like, this is highway robbery. So, I mean, you really have to be like top 10, top 20 sure. to be getting that money. And I think that his concerts are where you're going to have the most impact to his pocket. As you see in him talking about being publicly lynched after his concert is canceled, right? I love how people evoke that symbolism around lynching, because it always reminds me of Clarence Thomas when he said it after he was being accused of his sexual harassment allegations from Anita Hill when he's being confirmed into the Supreme Court. And those were true. Let's just be real. It just was the timing. She was ahead of her time, Anita Hill.
And Sherilyn Ifill, who's the president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, tweeted about that. She has a big problem with it because she said, you know what? I have studied lynching. Mm-hmm. And this use of the word, and he's not the only one to use it. Plenty of people have used it, right? There have been white people who've used it. There have been black people who've used it. I think it's very curious when white people use it. But, you know, she said as a student of what that level of violence was and how it was enacted, to use the phrase so lightly these days when someone brings forth allegations against you and you have the opportunity to continue to walk free or, you know, be pursued in a court of law, then you cannot talk about lynching at all. You can't talk about it. I mean, we've just had a lynching memorial open. So maybe there will be more awareness around this going forward. In our second segment, we're back to Kanye, folks. We are back.
Wow.
We're back to Kanye.
Kanye's selling
something. Kanye is trending. He is trending right now. Kanye West did a live segment with TMZ of all outlets, which makes me feel like this was money fueled. Because why else would you choose TMZ? And in his live segment, he's talking to two white appearing men. I'm assuming they're white. About all kinds of things. He talked.
Wait, but the dude with the dreadlocks? He's a nice candidate. You white dude with dreadlocks?
I'm not sure because the reason I'm assuming that they were both white is because someone late. Let me get to the story. And then I'll explain that because I was kind of in the story. Okay. Kanye does a TMZ live segment with two men and talks about a lot of things. He talks about why he was hospitalized. He talks about where he is today, what his vision is for tomorrow. And in this segment, he expresses a very strong opinion about slavery. He says, quote, when you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. Like you was there for 400 years and it's all of y'all, end quote. Obviously, that is a problem. And he was confronted with that already in the TMZ newsroom. So TMZ, of course, is still rolling. And a visibly, clearly black person named Van Lathan in the TMZ newsroom who works for TMZ. That's another question.
Thank goodness for him.
Kanye says, quote,
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Kanye says, quote, do you feel that I'm being free and I'm thinking free? End quote. Lathan goes on to say, quote, I actually don't think you're thinking anything. I think that what you're doing right now is the absence of thought. And the reason why I feel like that is because, Kanye, you're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to believe whatever you want. But there is fact and real world, real life consequence behind everything that you just said. And while you are making music and being an artist and living a life that you've earned by being a genius, the rest of us in society have to deal with these threats to our lives. We have to deal with the marginalization that has come from the 400 years of slavery that you said for our people was a choice. Frankly, I'm disappointed. I'm appalled. And brother, I am unbelievably hurt by the fact that you have morphed into something to me that isn't real. End quote.
He said all the things.
And he went on to tell Kanye that he went on to tell Kanye that he has to be responsible, held accountable for the things that he says. He said, your voice is too big. So obviously, the Twitterverse and other verses went crazy with this. There is a hashtag, if slavery were a choice, if slavery was a choice. It's hilarious. And that's my first question, though. My first question is, is it okay for Black people to process the ignorance that Kanye spewed by making a joke of slavery? Would that happen in any other community?
Well, I think that this is how we do, right? Like, I mean, this is where I love Black Twitter. I mean, like, I'll be on the train or something and just laughing out loud. And, you know, and people look over to me like, I'm on Twitter. I'm not feeling like I'm not laughing. I'm not having belly laughs on the train. And I'm like, you're not on Black Twitter. You know, every horrifying thing. I mean, like, what else could you do with a Kanye moment where he's denying slavery? His mom rolling over in her grave.
He doesn't deny slavery. He said that we chose slavery.
Oh, sure. But he denies that. That's a denial of slavery.
Because the word itself, the definition
of slavery is bondage.
Right.
Meaning you have no choice. Right. Like that's.
Of course.
You're denying slavery if you're denying the very essence of what it was. Mm-hmm. You're denying. So it's almost like, you know, those people walked into those furnaces during the Holocaust. You know, how I'm going to get all of y'all? It's all of y'all. How am I going to get y'all in the oven? You know what I mean? Like, that's a similar thing to say. But
what I'm saying is, if someone were to say something like that, and they say it all the time, right, about mm-hmm. the Holocaust, there is not an eruption of memes and GIFs making light of... No, I'm not criticizing it. I'm asking, though, is it okay for us to do that? Can we do that?
I feel like Jews collectively deal with their history of oppression in a very reverent and different way.
Sure.
It's very different.
Right.
You know, it's all up in their, you know, religious rituals, and it's just very reverent. And I feel like part of Black American culture is irreverence. It's humor. Right. It's about taking the outrageous and going with it. Being like, are we using our made up names now? You know, like, and going with it, you know? And it you know, there's something about that has allowed us to maintain relatability and maintain a sanity, I think. When you have this level of heartbreak in front of you, I think if I'm Kanye's mother, I'm dealing with that in a very different way. But me not knowing Kanye from a bag of beans, I could be irreverent.
So you don't feel like it was in any form disrespectful or whatever towards our ancestors.
Oh, I feel like humor is often disrespectful, and that's what makes it good, as Michelle Wolf so aptly showed us, right? At the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
But if you think about it from that point of view, then we were punching down, were we not? Or were we punching up at Kanye?
No, we're the butt of this joke.
Okay.
It's different if right-wing white supremacists read it.
Some white people who did try to jump in.
Oh, sure. So when they do it, it's very different because they're punching down, right? Right. Like, because if they're saying if slavery was a choice and they know for a fact that if they went to a time machine, they'd be a slave master.
Sure.
That's a very different situation. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact we go on a time machine, we're a slave.
Right.
So we're talking about ourselves.
Okay.
It's almost like when Cat Williams made this joke. Eddie Murphy made the joke talking about, you know, how people be acting hard and saying during slavery, you would never be whipping me. I would never get whipped. What? If I was a slave, I would do blah, 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 blah. And then he reenacts this kind of scenario where you get that first whip.
Mm. And then everything changes.
You start enthusiastically TikTok. and we're laughing at ourselves because that's Eddie Murphy.
Right.
Eddie Murphy not even in the house. You know that.
He's not in the house. He's definitely not in the house.
Murphy is not in the house, okay? He's on that field. And so we're talking about ourselves and putting ourselves in historical context and mm-hmm. saying, what if?
Okay.
Right? And then making a joke of that what if, because what Kanye said was so absolutely outlandish. Okay. I mean, how else are you going to do that?
Other interview Kanye news. Kanye finally released the interview that he had with Charlamagne the God, who's the next Oprah, according to him.
Okay.
And Charlamagne spoke with him for 2 hours. I have not watched this interview because it is 2 hours long, but I have read many summaries. And so, you know, he talks about why he's in his feelings with Barack Obama, because Barack Obama called him a jackass, and a few other things. Why he's in his feelings with Jay-Z, because Jay-Z didn't come to his wedding. Obviously, that is a big slight. That's a really big slight. If that's someone you, because Jay-Z says, you know, Kanye is my brother. You don't show up to your brother's wedding. That's a lot. He, you know, Charlamagne did try to get right into it. And maybe Charlamagne was the right person. You're hating on Charlamagne, but Charlamagne did have a TMZ moment where he was walking down the street with Tiffany Haddish, and he made some very clear comments on where he stands with R. Kelly. It's one of the few times where I was like, oh, Charlamagne is on the right side here. You know, he was like, R. Kelly's been canceled, Pied Piper, blah, blah, blah. Charlamagne in this interview tries to take it very seriously and, you know, dives right in and asks Kanye, mentally, how are you? Kanye is Kanye and is not really given full sentence answers. So it's a, so it's a little hard to know, right? But Charlamagne pushes him to get better answers, and he still kind of shucks and jives and fear, stress, being in control, manipulation, whatever. You know, that's what the types of answers he's giving. And Charlamagne then became very concrete and said, I go to therapy every Friday at 3 p.m. What do you do for therapy? To which Kanye replied, he talks to his friends for 45 minutes at a time. So I'm going to let that stand, right? And at the same time, Kanye says he wants to take the stigma off of the word crazy. He explains what happened, why he was hospitalized. He says that even in the TMZ video, he explained, you know, that he had liposuction. And after the liposuction, you know, why did you get liposuction? Because I didn't like the way I was looking. He explains that he became hooked to opioids. He became hooked to painkillers after that surgery. Similarly, Meek Mill admitted something like that this week. So what's going on? You know, we hear about opioids mostly affecting white middle class people, but it's obviously affecting the Black community.
The only reason it's not affecting us at the levels that it's affecting that,
because we don't have access to health care. We don't have access to health care. We don't get painkiller. We don't get
If you are getting treatment from a doctor the way that white people are getting treatment from a doctor, you have a similar risk of opioid addiction, because the issue at its core is the pharmaceutical companies pushing these opioids through doctors and then overprescribing it in the U.S.
Absolutely.
And
not only in the U.S., but
they
yes.
don't do it with Black people, because there is a stigma of addiction already on us. And that's been proven by many surveys and studies that have been done with medical students as well as with doctors. But also they just don't
think that we experience pain
the same way. Right? So they don't measure our pain the same way. They don't think we feel pain the same way. And so we are systematically under medicated for pain. And that's why we don't have the same problems with opioids, oddly enough.
Oddly enough.
But question, if you're rich and you're getting Kanye West gold service healthcare,
sure.
I imagine this is how Prince went down, right? This
was slightly differently, Michael slightly Jackson. Differently. But my question is, in this interview, Charlamagne and Kanye are talking about mental health. Kanye's on the one hand talking about it, but only to a certain degree, only in very ambiguous terms. What does that mean now about how we need to put into context the things that he's saying? Because Kanye admitted in his TMZ interview that his doctors wanted him taking a pill 3 times a day. I'm not sure what the pill is. And he said it was messing with his mind. He didn't like it. So he's only taking a pill once to twice a week.
That's not even medicine at that point. I think.
So like, does this change something?
Does this
change something? Is there a way to like channel Kanye's desire to rid the stigma of mental ill health in the Black community? Is there a way to use what's happening right now for good?
Well, I really, you know, so it is true that he's more likely mentally ill and having some level of an episode, right? I'm not a professional, so I don't know. It is also true that his ideas are repugnant when he's in his right mind. Like, he's just got repugnant. Like, you don't start with these ideas because of the mental illness. And I think that he is doing more to increase the stigma of mental illness than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's always had these ideas. It's just that now in this episode, he's become very, very loud about it. But the mental illness is not what's causing the ideas to happen. And I hope that people separate that. That the ridiculousness of his ideas are who Kanye is at his core. He's a man that does not read. He's a man that has a tremendous amount of internalized oppression, a very, very horrible relationship to women in his romantic life. I think at the end of the day, you know, Kanye, the person on meds, in therapy, may come to some realizations, but these core beliefs are who Kanye is. He's been this way for like 3 years.
And in our final segment, what are we looking forward to? What's making us happy?
I went to a meeting yesterday for the planning of the African Rainbow Association, so the Queer Black Association here in Vienna, to get ready for our Pride Parade.
Oh, lovely.
Our delegation on Pride Parade.
Okay,
so that's going to be
posted.
So,
how many of y'all is there going to be? It's going to be five? It's going to be five for y'all?
In terms of the whole group, it's about 100 of us.
All but right, people okay, that okay.
Definitely show up, it's probably going to be about 40 of us.
Awesome.
And so what we're looking at is the all Black Panther theme. We're going Black Panther on Friday.
Like it.
So I have a black convertible. Got a DJ.
Okay.
We're going to have some beverages, cold, of course, and some snacks in the trunk because, you know, we take care of ours.
Okay. I'm loving it.
Got a banner. We got two banners. We got two massive flags that you'll be able to see across a crowd above everything else.
Are y'all going
to
do the BIPOC queer flag? Like in Philly?
No, there's an Arab flag.
Oh, okay.
So we got our flag. Oh, you mean like we haven't done that with the black.
The black and brown stripes.
Mm-hmm. You liked that, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so it's the Black Panther. And then we got two people. We're trying to get two people, actually, to do body painting. Because some of us are
okay.
Ready.
Y'all trying to have some Grace Jones up in here. Okay.
Just the black bikini and stilettos. And, you know, just see what that do. So some of us are outrageous like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's interesting. What are you looking forward
Amazing.
To?
Well, I'm excited about Ready Player One. I went to see it last night and it was dope. Like, I came in with no expectations because I haven't watched the first one.
What is this about?
Ready Player One? Man. That's dope. It's a remake. Funny story, Steven Spielberg. I was like, Spielberg doing like a video movie? Like a video game movie? Is so good. Lena Waithe is the reason I went to see it, because I knew she was starring in it. And she's hilarious. She is hilarious. And I loved it. I really, really loved it. Like, I really enjoyed it. I haven't seen the first one, so now I'm going to have to go back and watch it. But I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed the CGI film. And I'm not a gamer. I am not a gamer.
So Lena Waithe is a star?
She is one of the stars, yes.
How have I been sleeping on this?
Yeah.
I need to get that whole entertainment from her.
Yes. You need to follow her on Instagram and you will know. So that's what I am absolutely excited about. And I'm looking forward to watching Infinity War on the weekend because, you know, it's a long weekend. We got good weather going on, so... Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have a dime, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. Until next time.